science is interesting, and if you don't agree, you can fuck off.
We now have Sam Fraser-Baxter, a recent graduate from a Masters of Science Communication from the University of Otago, back again for Dear Science. This week, we're having another segment totally dedicated to sharks. Last week, we talked about the nature of shark attacks and Australian state policy around approaching these attacks. But this week, we're looking at some different shark-related controversies. So first up this week, Sam, we're talking about the cage diving controversy at Stewart Island. Can you tell me what's going on here?
Sure. So Stewart Island is home to a natural aggregation of great whites in New Zealand. And the great white shark has been around for at least 400 million years. And basically seal and sea lion colonies are natural hotspots for great whites to basically meet up and live. And because the species is a deep water migratory and an apex predator, so there aren't many of them, they're very, very difficult to study. So despite the fact that great whites are kind of like this feared and very revered predator, perhaps the most feared animal in the world, scientists don't actually know a whole lot about them. So basically we've got this aggregation site in the Northern Tetes, just north of Oban, the main township in Stewart Island, about 6 kilometres away. And there is a small island called Edwards Island. And for about maybe 150 great white sharks, it's really, really difficult to know for sure. Edwards Island is home. And basically, these great white sharks spend 6 months of the year at Edwards Island, from about November through to about June, and then they migrate north to Australia and Fiji. And we know that because there's been a couple of New Zealand scientists studying the sharks down there, and they've been doing so since about 2006, I believe. And so in 2008, commercial cage diving started at Stewart Island. And there are two businesses now, and what they do is they take paying tourists to Edwards Island. They release chum into the water, so that's minced up fish and fish guts, lots of blood, and that attracts the sharks. And then the tourists go into a cage, it's lowered into the water, and the sharks basically circle around. And the cage diving process has two components. The first is chumming, and that involves putting the blood and kind of the fish guts into the water. And the second is enticing the sharks with a throwback, so that's a piece of fish on a line. So the sharks can't consume the chum, but they can consume the throwback. And basically, Stewart Island locals believe that after years of seasonal cage diving, these great whites have kind of learnt to associate boats and or humans in the water with this idea of being fed.
Right.
And as a result, these kind of people that treat the ocean as their second home, you know, like commercial fishermen and primarily power divers, they think they're at risk because of cage diving. And the idea that these sharks may be more inclined to check out people or boats.
I see. And so has there been any attacks yet?
No. So since cage diving started in 2008, there has not been an attack. And
But people are kind of saying this is a possibility, though, because of this new apparent association that sharks, great whites, have developed with this cage diving activity.
Yeah, exactly. And lots of Stewart Islanders, since the inception of cage diving at Stewart Island, they believe that they're seeing more great whites, and they're seeing more great whites interested in boats and divers in the water. So they're kind of reporting this increase in sightings and interactions with the species. And that anecdotal evidence could kind of be interpreted in two ways. One is that, yes, the sharks are learning to associate cage diving with kind of being fed, and as a result, they're swimming up to people in the water. Or two, you could say that cage diving has kind of put the spotlight on the presence of these sharks for the locals, and perhaps before that, it was a little bit more mysterious and they didn't really know whereabouts they lived and all of that carry on. So
Perhaps
cage diving and scientific study down there has taught these islanders, Strait Islanders, a lot about the sharks, and consequently they're just noticing them more.
I guess it's kind of almost like, if there isn't that solid sort of data around, you know, hard figures about how many sharks were and how many, were there before this activity happened and how many there are now, it's kind of almost a he said, she said type of thing.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So before cage diving, there were no behavioural kind of scientific studies on the way that great whites kind of might have used the waters around Stewart Island, and to conduct a study like that is extremely difficult just because there are so few of them, and kind of the tagging technologies operating on that kind of scale is expensive, and quite frankly I don't know if they exist. So there's no kind of data on the sharks' movements in the area before cage diving started, and there's no data afterwards. So for scientists, there's just no way to determine if there has been some kind of meaningful effect on the sharks' behaviour at Stewart Island. And perhaps people that oppose the Stewart Islanders' arguments that the sharks are learning to associate people in the water with being fed, you could say that no one's been bitten, so maybe there hasn't been any kind of meaningful habituation.
Do we know if sharks, they have the capacity to undergo this kind of learning process, you know, like, I guess just through having a dog, for example, that's quite a basic sort of, you know, like a repetitive association. I mean, I assume that sharks would also be able to learn a basic sort of association like this. Is there sort of evidence to suggest that?
It's tricky to say, and that argument that you just made is something that's brought up a lot. You know, if something like a dog, even a goldfish, can learn a time or some kind of environmental stimuli where it's about to be fed, surely a massive apex predator could. And we don't really know, but that capacity to learn is definitely at the crux of the argument. And if you go back to this idea of shark feeding, there are now restrictions in place which means that if a fish is taken off the throw bait, so the rope that keeps the shark swimming around the cage, the shark operator isn't allowed to use another piece of fish again for that day. So on any given day, one shark might be able to eat one fish around the cage. And the argument then is that amount of food, so one fish for one shark, is that sufficient for a shark to be able to then go, all right, there's a boat or there's a person in the water, maybe I'm going to get a feed. And there's literally no way to kind of confidently say yes or no just because it hasn't been studied. But theoretically, if the controversy was taking place in Auckland Harbour, it would definitely capture the nation. But just because it's so far south,
right,
you know, out of kind of the gaze of the wider public, it's out of sight and out of mind. And the reality of the situation is that wherever humans and large numbers of sharks share the same environment, an attack is likely to be inevitable, and it's impossible to say when, but it could happen tomorrow or it could happen in 50 years.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, it will be impossible to untangle the cause of the attack. And then New Zealand will be interested in the controversy. But because
sort of like a post-attack interest, in a way.
Yeah, it will blow up, and the Stewart Islanders will be saying, look, for years we've been trying to tell Parliament this. We've been lobbying to get cage diving banned. And it will completely blow up then, but for now, while no one's been bitten, New Zealand's not really interested.
And so also today on the show, we're looking at Reunion Island, which is a small French island east of Madagascar, which has experienced quite a high number of fatalities when it comes to shark attacks. Can you tell me about this? There's been some recent attack earlier this year, hasn't there?
Well, there's actually been a few. So 29th of April, about 2 weeks ago, there was yet another fatality at Reunion Island. He was a boogie boarder who was bitten on the shark and basically bled to death on the beach. And Reunion Island is this kind of horrible and perfect storm where you've got these environmental factors, which we're very unsure about, which has kind of increased the incidence of shark attack. And since 2011, there has been 23 recorded shark attacks, and 9 of them have been fatal. And, you know, normally we kind of describe shark attacks as these very random and infrequent events, but since 2011, there's been this huge spike in shark attacks and fatalities, and it's the place has earned a sinister reputation as the shark attack capital of the world.
Mm.
And it's experienced between 15 and 20% of the world's shark attacks since 2011. And for such a small island, it is very disproportionate.
Definitely. That's really interesting that it's just experienced this massive spike. You know, it's not been always been the case in this place. And so what are the theories for why this has happened?
There's a few. So it's not that the shark behaviour is any different than any other place in the world. It's not this idea that the sharks have maybe taken a taste for human flesh or something horrible like that, but more likely there's some kind of environmental condition that is changing since 2011, which has increased the likelihood of humans and large sharks interacting.
Mm.
And these kind of conditions are often hard for scientists to determine and even more difficult to study. So science, which seeks to explain the issue, is limited, but there is lots of ideas and perhaps anecdotal evidence which tries to explain it. One idea is that urban expansion on Reunion Island, it's an island of about 850,000, and basically urban expansion has meant that there's increased rainwater runoff into the sea just because of concreted areas. Mm. So that creates muddy inshore waters, and that's a condition which bull sharks prefer to hunt in. So when we talk about shark attacks, we're normally talking about 3 species of sharks, which are implicated in the vast majority of them, and they're bull sharks, which spend a lot of time in estuarine waters and up rivers, tiger sharks, which is a tropical species, and then of course great whites, which is more of a cold water species, but also spend a bit of time in warm waters. So perhaps increased rainwater because of urban expansion has meant that bull sharks kind of prefer to hunt inshore, and as a result they meet a lot of surfers. And then another argument, which is perhaps a little more pertinent, is the end of shark fishing at the island in 1999. Basically, after high levels of toxins were found in shark meat, they banned shark fishing. And many people argue that since they banned shark fishing, bull sharks have basically boomed, the population of bull sharks, and they've basically taken the ecological niche of the reef sharks, which used to live around Reunion Island. So, and then you've also got the creation of a marine reserve in 2007, which covers 40 kilometres of the west coast of the island. So there's this idea that that's allowed a lot of the fish populations to bounce back, and that's just created this feeding ground for sharks. And because there's no shark fishing, the shark population numbers have boomed, and as a result there are lots of sharks in the water, and now there are lots of people being bitten, many people getting bitten. So the government's really at odds at what to do about it. So that's just another massive controversy, and it's an example of the social and economic costs of these kind of high rates of shark attacks in small areas, which we've seen at other countries around the world. So, you know, you've got these really small kind of tight-knit surfing and boogie boarding communities and lots of people dying, and it's very emotive and no one really knows what to do.
And so what are there, what's the sort of government's stance on it now? Are they still trying to sort of nut out a plan, or do they have some sort of ideas about how to approach it?
Well, in 2013, following the death of a 13-year-old, the government basically banned surfing and swimming in more than half of the island's waters. So Reunion Island is this incredibly idyllic place. It's warm water, it's beautiful, and there are lots of really, really fantastic surf breaks around. And, you know, after this massive spike in fatalities there, they basically created a surfing prohibition where they said, if you're going to go out and surf, we're going to fine you $50 or 50 euros. So that's one measure they've taken, and that continues, but many surfers and boogie boarders just ignore it because they want to go surfing and they're aware of the risks, and unfortunately people keep getting bitten. They've created these kind of they're not nets, they're barrier nets, so they're like a fence, which does create an area where sharks cannot enter and they can surf in there. So they've made two of those, and those cost millions of euros. So it's you know, it's coming at a massive cost. And then they've also created this kind of protection squad. So at some surf breaks at particular hours, there are these guys called Vigis who basically get in wetsuits with spear guns and GoPros on their heads, and they kind of patrol the waters in front of the surfers, the seaside of the surfers, and warn them if there are sharks coming. There's a really good Vice documentary on this topic, and it kind of shows the Vigis in the water swimming around for spear guns, and interviews a couple of the family members of victims, and it really, really depicts the controversy really well, and it's even cited, and it's just really tragic and sad.
So I guess it remains to be seen whether these measures will have a significant impact in at Reunion Island then.
Yeah, and you know, less people are going in the water because of the ban, but you know, these fatalities are still continuing. We've had two this year. So it's just a really kind of tragic and case, and no one really knows what to do.
Yeah, for sure. Well, thank you again for speaking with us today, Sam, for our Sharks Part 2, I suppose, Dear Science segment. We'll talk to you again next week.
Cool. Thank you very much.
That was Dear Science.